Welcome to the Delaware Football Roundup on WVUD. With Brandon Holvec, I'm Teddy Gelman. We break down Delaware's 17-0 shutout victory over CAA rival William & Mary.
It's Delaware versus William & Mary in a classic CAA matchup. The middle to Kane, now looking to pass. Over the middle, he's got Jarman, touchdown, Blue Hens! A 27-yard strike from J.P. Caruso to Jamie Jarman puts the Hens on the board. Mitchell dropping back to pass, almost intercepted, and it is off the hands of Adderley into the arms of Colby Reeder. Good punt from Pritchard, pushes Christian back, and he fumbled it. He loses it on the fair catch, picked up by Nazer Adderley at the 15-yard line. Hand off up the middle to Kane, gets stopped. Second effort, is he in? Touchdown, Blue Hens! Delaware comes away with a 17-0 victory in Newark.
The shutout victory was the first one for the Hens at home since 2011. 17-0, the final score. The Blue Hens, with the win, now improved to 4-2 on the season, 2-1 in the CAA. William & Mary drops to 2-4, 0-3 in the conference. J.P. Caruso got his first start at the quarterback position for the Blue Hens, and Caruso was 7 for 20, 78 yards and one touchdown. Joe Walker did not pass for anything, but he did come into the game and ran the ball four times for 24 total yards. Defensively, though, Brandon, that was the story of the game. Shutout, top to bottom, a dominant performance.
Had to be the story of the game. The Blue Hens defense, in Danny Rocco's words, stole the show, and that's definitely true. Holding William & Mary to 196 total yards, but also making plays. Three turnovers in this game, leading to much of the Blue Hens' offense, which is another thing they'll need to address. But defensively, when you make stops and you're giving your offense opportunities to score the ball, you really can't ask for anything more. It was their best defensive performance to date, and that's saying a lot because this has been a defense coming into this game, ranked third in the CAA in scoring defense, and a defense that's played some pretty nice games against good offenses. This was their best one yet.
Now, William & Mary is not your JMU or your Richmond. They started a very young quarterback out there yesterday, but whenever you give up 0 points to a team, that's a strong performance. You mentioned off-air before, Colby Reeder, Troy Reeder, Adderley, some of those players that we continue to hear about every single week, continuing to lead the way for this team. I think of note, or in a cumulative sense at this point, probably the most dominant defensive performance of the year, especially when you don't allow anything.
I definitely agree. Nazer Adderley had his best game of the season, contributing 6 tackles, 4 of them solo, but also coming up with a fumble recovery on special teams. It was a fumbled punt by Jalen Christian, and then also coming up with an interception deep down the field. Colby Reeder had the other turnover. It was an interception, but that first came off of Nazer Adderley's hands. He was the one who broke up the play, and then Reeder was in the right spot at the right time to come up with the interception. So you can really credit all three takeaways to Nazer Adderley, who started this spring drills as a cornerback, has transitioned to free safety, and in that role has been a guy coming up and making tackles, and in this game really making plays for the Hens defense.
And how about the Reeder brothers combining for 15 total tackles?
I've been very, very impressed with what we've seen from them. Colby Reeder, we've been singing his praises on this show the last couple of weeks. Third straight game that he's made an impact play. 2 interceptions this season, against this William & Mary team, and 1 2 weeks ago in Newark against JMU. He also blocked an extra point against Stony Brook, which was pretty influential at the end of the game. He has really grown more comfortable with the defense. Danny Rocco said last Monday that as he begins to be able to play instinctually and not have to think, he's really come into his own. He's been very impressive. And then Troy Reeder, too. We knew coming into this season that he was an impact player. He was second on the team in tackles a year ago, but especially in these 2 games since Charles Bell went down with the injury, his middle linebacker partner in the middle there, he has been dominant. 12 tackles against Stony Brook, 9 in this game against William & Mary, including a sack and 1.5 tackles for a loss. He is all over the place, and a big part of why Delaware has been so successful against the running game this year. He's clogging those holes in the middle.
William & Mary in the first quarter went into Delaware territory twice. In the second quarter, they did not even get past their own 30-yard line, the Tribe, that is. And in the third quarter, they once again did not go into Delaware territory. In the fourth, they went down to the Delaware 33. That was the furthest they had gone all game, did not come up with any points Offensively for the Hens, J.P. Caruso, first start. How would you characterize and judge his performance?
So-so. It was very similar to what he showed in New York against Stony Brook, 7 of 20 for 78 yards, as you mentioned before. It's a very, very pedestrian line. They did just enough. They were able to convert opportunities offensively when the defense made takeaways and Caruso didn't turn the ball over. That's the best thing you can say about his game is he didn't turn it over. Delaware had thrown an interception in every game this season so far, whether it came from Caruso or Walker. That's big because this down the stretch was only a two-score game. An interception gives the other team a great chance at a quick score, whether it be a field goal or a touchdown. So that's the best part of his game. Other than that, he didn't really make any down-the-field plays. Two decent passes, one to Gene Coleman, one to Jamie Jarman, which was a 27-yard touchdown. But outside of that, he missed some throws. He was throwing the ball a little bit outside and high on some out routes to Cherry and Jarman. He had a couple drops from Charles Scarf over the middle early in the game. It was just a so-so game, and Delaware was shut down for a lot of it in the middle. Not really much of a change from what we've seen out of this quarterback position for the last couple of years.
Well, Jamie Jarman, 27-yard touchdown. That was Caruso's longest pass of the game. And for Jarman, a touchdown, I believe that was a fourth consecutive game with a touchdown.
Yeah, it was. Really impressive.
For Jarman. So all the talk preseason about Deontay Cherry being the guy, he is a guy, but Jamie Jarman has become a favorable target for these quarterbacks.
Definitely. He came into this season, now in his junior year, his first 2 years, he did not score a touchdown. His first touchdown came 4 weeks ago. Now he's scored a touchdown in every single game. It was his only catch of the game, so he still isn't that huge of a factor, but he gets in the end zone. And you're right, Teddy. It seems like Jamie Jarman is the top receiving target, and Deontay Cherry is just amidst the guys behind him, whether it's Vinny Papale or Gene Coleman or Charles Scarf. He's just another one of the guys right now, at least, and Jamie Jarman has really become that top target.
The 27-yard touchdown from Jarman came at the 9:01 mark of the second quarter. It put the Hens on top, 7-0. Here's Jarman after the game talking about the reception.
I was coming in the motion across, and I was looking at the safety, and I was like, he's going to do exactly what we think he did, what we've been planning it to be all week. So when I seen him back up and not go across the middle, I instantly knew, all right, this is six.
And he was wide open, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And Caruso also said post-game that he almost missed Jarman, which is true. Jake pointed that out on our broadcast. The throw was just a little bit ahead of him, but he had so much space. Jarman was able to make an athletic play, kind of juggle it, and then pull it in, and he was just steps from the end zone after that.
At halftime, it was 10-0. Frank Rago with a field goal at the end of the second quarter. 10-0. From the perspective of somebody calling the game, what was... I wasn't there, so I'm trying to get the vibe of the fans, which appeared to be a pretty nice crowd.
Yeah, biggest crowd of the season. A little bit over 18,000.
It's not a sellout, but a lot of people there on parents and family weekend. What was the environment heading into halftime? What did people feel about that lead, 10-0 at the half?
I think most people feel good about it. This is a William & Mary team that came into the game ranked 5th in the CAA in defense. The week before, you came out with a win against Stony Brook, trailing 20-7 at the half. So defensively, that message stuck from last week coming into this game. The defense looked very, very good in the first half. Offensively, there weren't any glaring mistakes. They just weren't moving the football. So I think you come into halftime at 10-0 thinking, 2-score lead, we can build on this. And this is a game that is well within our grasp to win. It's not over. William & Mary came back from 14-3 a year ago in the fourth quarter to beat Delaware. But I think, at least from the booth, we were felt the game was pretty comfortable for Delaware at that point because of the way the defense was playing.
Well, you mentioned that the Tribe came back from that deficit last season, ended up beating the Hens on the road in Williamsburg. Yesterday, there wasn't any of that. It was 10-0 for most of the second half. But there was no defensive lapse. They continued to make plays, get turnovers, keep it going. And while the offense couldn't generate much in that second half, maybe they didn't have to. We'll play a clip from Rocco a little bit later on when he says that he needs to see more offensively. But when you shut out a team defensively, the offensive performance is not as magnified because of how good that defensive performance is.
True. And also, a big part of that comeback from William & Mary was the Blue Hens offense turning the ball over. It wasn't just that the Delaware defense collapsed. Joe Walker threw 2 fourth-quarter interceptions in the red zone in that game against the Tribe, which could have resulted in points to put that game away even earlier. So the offense did not move the ball well. They're going to need to move the ball well against some of these opponents that they have coming up on the schedule. We keep saying that. But they also keep winning because of the defense, and when they don't turn the ball over, that allows the defense to continue to feast. It seemed like time and time again, William & Mary was starting their drive from inside their own 20-yard line. When you give the Blue Hens defense that type of field position to work with, they're going to make it very tough on the opponent, as opposed to turning the ball over in your own territory and giving them short fields, where maybe they'll come away with a bend don't break, but you're still giving up points each time. You like to see that the Blue Hens offense didn't turn the ball over like they did last year in Williamsburg.
I don't want to call it a boring game, but it wasn't an exciting game. In the beginning of the game, the first six combined drives were punts, and with the exception of the two drives in the first half that ended in the Jarman touchdown and the Rago field goal, everything else was punts.
This is how Delaware's going to win football games, though. This is what Danny Rocco said after the game when he was talking about Nick Pritchard, the punter who had 10 punts in this one for Delaware. He was praising his ability to flip the field for the Blue Hens and keep William & Mary inside their own 20 to start the drives, as I was just saying. That's how they're going to win. They're going to flip the field on you. They're going to have tough defense. And if they come away with a takeaway, the offense will put something on the board. And you hope the offense makes just enough plays to have a lead for the defense. Special teams, then, is heightened importance. Defensively, you can't really have any lapses. You can't allow the big play, the gash in the defense late in the game when you're playing in this style. But with what they have talent-wise on the offense, this is how they're going to win football games. It might not be pretty. It's not going to be like what Richmond does under Danny Rocco a year ago with Kyle Lauletta, who led the CAA in passing yards. But it does get the job done, at least to this point in the season, when they're playing an opponent that is probably under their talent level overall.
Well, the Hens held the Tribe offense to under 200 yards. The defense was outstanding for the Hens. Here's Coach Rocco afterwards talking about the Blue Hens' defensive performance Saturday afternoon.
Today the defense really stole the show. They were outstanding. I think it's six straight quarters that we have not relinquished a point. They played with great passion, great energy. Our defense is playing with confidence right now. I think we got a really good defensive structure. Coach Kosh and the defensive coaches are doing an outstanding job teaching it and coaching it, and our players are buying in.
When he gave the halftime speech halfway through the Stony Brook game after the defense gave up the largest amount of points that they have given up in a half
this season, 20
points against Stony Brook last week in the first half. They came out in the second half outstanding. Shut out in the second half. Delaware offense did just enough to get by the Seawolves last weekend. And then yesterday, defense gave up nothing at all. Is it becoming more clear how good they are, or is this just another step in what we already knew as to how good they have been?
Another step. It's another step in the process. This is the defense we knew. It's not a great offense they're going up against. Sean Mitchell was a true freshman in his first ever collegiate start at quarterback. The defense preyed on that. This is what we've seen from Delaware so far this year. Their best performance defensively for sure, but also against the Tribe offense that's not stellar. So I think this is more of the same. I don't think it's a referendum on where the team is at in the season.
Joe Walker rushed four times, 24 yards. He did not pass anything. It was only Caruso behind the quarterback. Here's Danny Rocco. We're going to break this down in a moment, but Rocco, after the game, talking about his utilization of Walker maybe as a runner and Caruso as a passer.
I thought Joe was productive today. I think we can do more with him in a similar capacity. And then I think with JP, to be honest with him, we may have had a little bit too much. He won't say that, but we may have had just a little bit too much volume. We got to just trim some things down, see what he's most comfortable with, see what he does best. We're going to have to be a little more creative offensively to get that quick strike, big chunk of yards. And those things have just been hard for us to get.
Was J.P. Caruso, here's a question, was he a better option out there this week than Walker? Was it the right decision to have him throw compared to Walker?
Yeah, and I think this was a decision that after the Stony Brook game you had to make, because he came in and gave your team momentum the first drive last week When Caruso came in, the third drive for Delaware overall, Caruso's first, he led them all the way down the field. They scored a touchdown. It was their first score of the game. This was the correct decision to make. And even though the stat sheet doesn't show a great performance, because it wasn't one, he didn't turn the ball over, which Joe Walker did in every single start this season, and that's very important. So Caruso showed enough to, in my opinion, to continue to be the starter of this Blue Hens team, and I think he will be the starter for the remainder of the season.
4-2 now, the team is. I think at this point in this season, way more than the last couple seasons, there is legitimate discussion among the fan base and supporters of a possible playoff push.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story.
Yeah, go
so
for
we're
it.
Coming out of Delaware Stadium after the game. Jake Lampert and I, Jake's a sophomore and I'm a junior here, both broadcasting the game for the station. And Jake is like, I know it's early, but how do the playoffs work? How do we sign up for playoff games? How do we get to go? And I looked at him and I said, I don't know. It's never been a question. It's never come up in my 2 years here. But I think it's a legitimate question. I'm not going to put them in the playoffs right now. We'll see if they get a top 25 spot after this game. A lot of teams in the top 25 lost this week. But you can see the path to where they'd be in the playoffs.
And that's the fact of the matter right now, that there is a path, and that if they lose three more games or more, they're not going to get in. But if they win some of these close ones, it's a legitimate discussion. So now at 4-2, this team was not 4-2 last year. This was the day. Well, we are recording this on Sunday, the 15th of October. This was the day a year ago, exactly a year ago, in which Dave Brock is fired.
It was a
year ago. So this is actually amazing, but it's now 6:25 on Sunday night.
It was about this time.
It may have been 6:10, 6:40, but it was Sunday the 16th last year, but it's the 15th this year, and he was fired then. Dennis Dotton Carter comes in. The team played, I forget the number, but about 500 ball. Dotton Carter goes to...
Yeah, they were 2-3 under Dotton Carter.
Where did he go?
He's at UConn.
UConn.
As a defensive
line. And then Rocco gets hired in December. What I will say is that I think that, not that progress is most clear at this point, but after the JMU loss, there was a state of, not flux or confusion, but a state of how critical these next couple games are. And they've won both of them. There's still a few problems. We know that the offensive inefficiency is still there, and this team is not all of a sudden a juggernaut offensively, and they won't become one. But now, more than maybe at all this season, the identity is the most clear, and you can sense that it's a team. We know it. We knew it before, but we know it even more now. Based off the defense, well, we didn't even talk about the running game today, but Kanai Kane seems to be more and more the guy who is getting those touches. Rushing-wise, he had 12. Williams had 12. Thomas Jefferson, again, 4 carries. He's not really getting anything out there.
Yeah, well, Thomas Jefferson is... Mike brought it up on last week's podcast, but he is dealing with an injury. Rocco talked about that on last Monday. He's got a rib problem that's been bothering him for the last 3 weeks or so. So that's led them to go to Williams and Kane a little bit more. But I think you can still make the statement that Kanai Kane has taken a hold of this running back position, not because of the injuries, but because of his play. Kareem Williams had one of his worst games in a Blue Hens uniform, I thought, with 12 carries for 27 yards. There just weren't any holes for him, 2.3 yards per carry. But Kanai Kane comes in, first drive, third down, third and long. They hand it to Kane. He picks up a first. He continued to be the guy in short yardage, but also on third down plays, and he finishes with 12 carries, 49 yards, a touchdown. He's not... you know, going to win first team all CAA. But here's a guy who came into the season as the third, fourth running back on this depth chart, and I think he's the clear-cut guy right now, at least in most of these situations until Jefferson's healthy.
So we speak of the identity of this team, a defense-centered personality running game. I said it last week. If Caruso, I guess I should put in parentheses right now, or Walker, although right now it appears to be Caruso, but if Caruso can become a game manager, I think this team can very well be playoff bound. But what they have to do is they'll have to win a couple of these upcoming games that will be tough. Richmond, Maine, Villanova, these are the three tough ones.
Albany too, don't sleep on Albany.
So the only team on the schedule that you would look at now and say, yeah, they should win it, but it's also on the road against a team that plays tough, that's Towson. So there's five games left. Richmond, Towson, Albany, or Maine, Albany, and Villanova. sitting at 4-2, if they get three losses, they've got a very good shot at making the playoffs. Very good shot.
You mean three wins?
Three losses. I'm saying...
Do you think they can make it in with five losses?
No, I'm saying in total, if the Hens end up with three losses, so if they only lose one of their final games...
Oh, yeah, they're in the playoffs.
They're in.
Yeah.
If they lose two of the remaining five, I think they got a shot. Five is going to be tough if they finish this season.
If they finish with five losses, they're not going to make the
playoffs. That would mean they have a 2-3 record over the next couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So with Richmond up next... We know Richmond. Rocco knows Richmond. He had something funny to say at the end of the press conference. He said, well, I'm paraphrasing it. He wouldn't have to have a
flip
score.
Chart.
A flip chart to look into the Richmond team. So he knows them. They are not as good as they were last year, but they're good. They're not as good as they were with Rocco, but that's another talented team that the Hens are going to host. Maybe to the Hens, good for them that they have brought some of these teams to Newark as opposed to going on the road. But they beat Stony Brook on the road, so maybe they could beat some of these teams on the road. Richmond comes in. This is a critical game. In terms of the attitude for the fan base now, we'll go with a pessimistic perspective first. If they lose this one and go to 4-3, many people are probably back to, all right, we're an improving team, but clearly not able to beat the better ones. Optimistic perspective would be, if we beat Richmond, this is a legit team that can make a push. Now, the question is, how do they do it?
That's a good question. I would describe the Richmond Spiders as the inverse of the Delaware Blue Hens. They're the second best offense in the CAA behind fifth-year senior Kyle Lauletta, who's now the all-time leader in passing yards and passing touchdowns for Richmond and has continued to lead the CAA for each of the last two seasons in those departments. And they're the second worst total scoring defense, where Delaware now is the second best scoring defense in the CAA and among the league's bottom offenses, particularly when it comes to the passing attack, which is Richmond's main focus. It comes down to, in my mind, what can the offense provide? 17 points against Richmond? Probably not going to win the football game. Delaware being +3 in turnovers against Richmond? Probably not going to happen. You might be +1 if you're lucky, +2, but I don't think you're going to come away in that game with three turnovers on a very, very good offense, no matter how good your defense is. So to me, it comes down to, can the offense have sustained drives against one of the worst defenses they're going to play against this year? Can they get the ball at their own 25-yard line and chew the clock and march all the way down the field and put it in the end zone? We did not see that against William & Mary, a better defense than this Richmond Spiders defense, but still just the fifth defense, a average defense in the CAA. They only scored when they had the ball in prime field position from defensive takeaways. Can the offense sustain a drive? What will they get from the running game? Will that be consistent enough to put them in third and medium, third and short situations that are convertible for J.P. Caruso?
Richmond has played close games for the most part, with the exception of a game in September against Howard, when they beat Howard 68-21, and then on Saturday they beat Towson 28-3. Likely a case of just they got out ahead and they didn't really need to score
Towson's not good.
But prior to that, Albany, Elon, those were two games that were decided by 3 points. Each of them decided by 3 points, and they only beat Colgate by a couple points, and then they lost by 12 to Sam Houston State. I'll go, and I don't think this is a stretch at all to say that this team is not as good as JMU was. So from a perspective of somebody who watched the JMU game, I think that you can have confidence in the ability for the Blue Hens to be competitive against them because of how they were against JMU.
I don't know if I agree with that, because Richmond's top attack is in the passing game, and the Blue Hens in the secondary, they've been great, but I don't think they're as strong as the front seven is, where JMU's top attack is that running game, and it was also a windy game day to limit the passing game. I think Nigel Hill has been admirable, but he's still a backup cornerback. They lost Tenny Adewusi in this game, so they're not going to be able to rotate him in. I'm looking at that matchup defensively and thinking that that's a tougher matchup, Richmond passing attack versus Delaware secondary, than JMU running attack versus Delaware front seven.
But you're just looking at Richmond offense and Delaware defense. I'm looking at the whole team. JMU defense is good. So I'm looking at the whole team. I'm saying the fact...
Yeah, if you can play the number one team in the country to 10 points, you should be in the game against the 13th best team in the country.
By association, yeah, you should be closer against Richmond. I'm not saying that they're going to go out and beat them, but they had opportunities to score against JMU that they did not convert. Against Richmond, they'll have to convert them because there will be more of them. So if there are more opportunities to convert offensively because the Richmond defense is not as good as the JMU defense, you're going to have to take advantage of them in the air. Sure, Richmond is likely going to get some of those longer completions, and they're going to beat some of those secondary guys. And this may need to become a game in the air. This has the potential to be a very fun game. This is not going to be a ground-and-pound, physical, hard-hitting game like Stony Brook. This is not going to be that kind of a game. That's not the way Richmond plays.
Yeah, I mean, unless the Blue Hens can get them to completely come out of their identity, it's not going to be those types of games. And that's part of the reason, Teddy, why the Albany game's 41-38. Elon is 36-33. Those are high-scoring, back-and-forth, light-them-up-in-the-air game attacks. And if it's that type of game all the way through and through, where the winning team is scoring 30-plus points, Delaware's not going to win. They need to do their best defensively to limit Richmond, and I think it's going to come somewhere in the middle between these two teams, a Delaware team that averages, I think, 17, 18 points a game, and a Richmond team that's up there in the 30s.
Now, for Caruso, you have to think, assuming he starts again, which I would be surprised
if he wasn't,
he's not going to bring this fifth-year starter, all-CAA game out there. You can't just create that. So now, does Rocco script this game a little bit more, knowing that there's a shot that he's going to have to score more points? He hinted at that after the game, that we needed to score more points.
I really felt this week we had a really good week of practice. Thought we had a really good rhythm to what we were doing in practice this week. And I felt like we had some good substitution patterns and some good rhythm in the game offensively early, but we just weren't unable to sustain it. So we got to look at every position, and we just got to find a way. If we want to remain relevant here this year, we're going to have to find a way to score more points.
So the question is, does he kind of allocate time for that in practice to ensure, what are we going to do offensively to do that? Because you can't put this completely on the defense and say, well, you're going to have to hold this offense in check, and we're going to do our part, but we know our defense is a strong suit of our team. I have a hunch that he's going to need, Rocco and the offensive staff this week is going to do a little more offensive prep.
I think that's a good point, Teddy. One of the other things that Rocco talked about after the game is that winning games in the manner that they are right now, relying so heavily on the defense, will eventually wear on them, and that, again, they do need to score more points. So I think you're going to see more of those creative looks. I wouldn't be surprised to see more of Joe Walker in that dual backfield read option, triple option formation. I think that worked fairly well, albeit it was the first time that anybody had seen that. So William and Mary didn't have film on it to prepare for, but I think you could see more of those looks with Joe Walker and maybe even let him throw the ball a few times to back the defense off. And then as far as Caruso goes, they did try a lot of bootlegs and plays that rolled Caruso outside the pocket. And what that does is it kind of cuts the field in half, because Caruso from the right hash is not going to throw the ball to the left corner. He only has to look at the right side of the field, and it cuts your read in half. You only have maybe one or two receivers on that side of the field. I think they'll have more looks like that to try to simplify things, because he's probably not where they want him to be, but they also need to realize that he's not there yet, so don't push him too far. And he's not where a Kyle Auletta was last year with what Danny Rocco had.
But this is also the type of game where he needs to get closer to it.
Because you can't win with 78 yards against this team. And we also have seen Joe Walker go 20 of 30 for 100 or whatever it was, 202 yards. We've seen a little bit more from this passing offense this year than we saw in the Dave Brock era. It's just now that the CAA games have begun and you're getting some stiffer competition, you're kind of back to that same game plan of pound, pound, pound defense, and then the side effect of that is the quarterbacks come out with these really small lines of 7 of 15, 7 of 20, less than 100 passing yards.
It feels like every week now we discuss how each game is the most important game of the season. That's what you get when there's a lot of pressure on the team and on the program to win after such a long time where they did and could not win. But here we are now. Six games gone. There's 11 games in the season. Over halfway through. Six played, five to go. You win this one, 5-2. It's looking really good moving forward. You lose it, you back to that 500 play again. With the defense that Richmond has, to me, this has the potential to be a huge turning point game. I don't think JP Caruso or Walker or anybody is going to turn into somebody they are not in this game. But this is also a chance to find and build some confidence because you're not going to play a defense this bad. Probably, maybe Towson, we'll have to check the stats, but among Maine, Albany, Villanova.
At the moment, Towson's ranked ninth in scoring defense. The team below Richmond is Rhode Island, who Delaware doesn't play this year. So by numbers, at this point in the season, this is the worst defense they'll play against. But I still wouldn't underrate just how good this team is overall. There's a reason why they're ranked 13th in the country, and they're probably going to move up. At least one team in Villanova lost ahead of them. And I think South Dakota State also lost ahead of them. They were 6th or 7th. So there's an opportunity for them to even be a top 10 team. So the optimist would say this is a great opportunity to get a statement signature win and put Delaware into the top 25 for good with two top 25 wins and maybe a top 10 win. But I also think it's still year one. And if they don't come out with the win in this game, you still have a chance to be relevant, as Rocco likes to say, at the end of the season, because of the teams left on their schedule, Richmond will be the top-ranked team when the new top 25 comes out. So this is, by the numbers, the hardest team left on the schedule. You do get them at home, which helps compared to that Villanova game and the Maine game later in the year, but this is the toughest team by the rankings.
As we are at just about that halfway point, it gives us a chance to reassess now, heading into these final five games. 4-2 on the year. Is, at this point, a playoff berth, I'll give a couple options, an expectation, a hope, a success, a long shot, and if they don't get in, is it a failure? How would you describe
so
all of that?
You gave me hope.
I gave you a whole lot.
Hope, success, failure.
Expectation.
Long shot, expectation. Okay. Definitely a hope, right? Everybody's hoping for the playoffs. And I think when you come into the year now 4-2, you get a little bit more of that. Okay, we're in it. We're in it right now. It's halfway through, and this season is not over yet. Last year it was over after six games. None of the games after that really mattered, especially when your head coach is fired a year ago today. Success, absolutely. I think that would exceed what you would expect from this team coming into this year if they made the playoffs. I think that was the high end, that was the ceiling, if you will, of the range of outcomes that you thought of with this Rocco team in year one. The highest end is maybe the playoffs. The lowest end is what they were last year. I think success absolutely describes what would happen in this scenario. Expectation, I'm not going to go that far yet. They have some tough teams on the schedule. And if they lose to Albany, Richmond, and Villanova, and they miss out on the playoffs, it shows that Delaware is no longer a bottom team in the CAA, but they're a mid-tier team with a chance to then improve the next season under Rocco, and it gives this program direction. Failure was the other one. I also don't think it's a failure because of those reasons I just said, because I don't think the expectation coming into this year was playoffs or bust. Did I hit on everything? Did I miss one?
I think you got it all. Any chance Caruso wows us this week and comes forward with offensive performance that we hadn't seen?
There's a chance, but I don't expect him to be in, like you said earlier, he's not all of a sudden going to become one of these all-CAA passers. I don't expect him to be in that 200-yard category or whatnot. But if he doesn't turn the ball over again, that would be huge in this game. If they can make a few more vertical down-the-field passes, that would be really big. They just didn't have that many chances at it in this past game against William & Mary. But I also don't expect him to be Kyle Auletta or Brian Shore all of a sudden.
Saturday, October 21st. It is the homecoming game. There should be a nice crowd at home here in Newark, Delaware, taking on Richmond. 3:30 kickoff, 3:15 our coverage on WVUD begins as the Hens look to make it 3 in a row, and this would improve him to 5-2 on the season with the win. 3:15, we've got it for you on WVUD. Thank you.